It's after the middle of May, so it's time for planting good crops, or for some people, seeds of destruction. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, it's good to be back with you. And it's also good to be here in the studio because it makes it a lot easier on me to engineer. And I like that. And unfortunately, we're not outside during a beautiful day. We're recording this on Thursday, and it's really nice out, and it's supposed to be real crummy on Friday and Saturday.
Well, that's okay, because I really just have to do it whenever I can get up here. And today just happened to be a day because, well, there are a few things going on around the State House, which I want to talk about a little bit later, that has drawn me northward, as they say. But, you know, Chuck, I'm kind of not. It is kind of nice. You know, we are now after the 15th of May. And if you ever read the Farmer's Almanac or you talk to old farmers, usually they basically say anytime after the middle of May, 15th of May, it's safe to start planting your crops because we should have passed the frost zone.
The last average day of frost.
Yes.
And Michigan, when I lived up there, I worked in the agriculture department. It wasn't in agriculture per se. It was small fruits because we did wine and grape research, and which means I was out pruning grapes in literally, I'm not kidding about this, waist-deep snow in January.
Yeah, sure.
Because that's when
Absolutely.
You prune grapes.
That's when you prune everything back. It's in the middle of winter.
When there's no
sap anywhere
flowing, you cut them, and you swear when you're done you've killed the plant.
Yes.
And let me tell you, by July... So in some cases, especially vinifera grapes,
you have to trim them again.
You have to go back and cut them back because there's a formula you use. I won't go into that. But our last average day of frost up there was Memorial Day weekend.
Well, again, I was going to say, I thought you guys, the farther north you get, you kind of start going down the calendar a little bit farther. So you guys are about almost 2 weeks back from where we are here, and you know, in central and southern Ohio. But so again. You know, this is the time where school's getting out, colleges have graduated, things are changing. We're shifting over into that summertime groove. Now, Chuck, again, a lot of people, during the summertime, what happens? Well, people move.
Right.
They buy and sell homes.
Yep.
We've
noticed a lot of that around here.
They go on vacations. They start investing in more leisure type things. They go boating. They go fishing. They go to the garden center and grab their garden stuff and plant gardens.
Yep.
And all of these things happen. This is kind of the time of the year right now where everything kind of transitions from, and I hate to say it because we live in a technological culture now where it really doesn't make that much of a difference anymore. But we go from survival mode to enjoy mode. And that's still wired into us in our DNA because,
sure.
You know, in the winter time when, you know, and you go into the fall and the winter and food starts getting scarce if you don't have like a grocery store close by, things of that nature. Your brain, your patterns of behavior and things go into, well, and we wouldn't call it survival mode now. We would just call it, you know, the winter doldrums or drudgery or whatever it might be. But it just seems like, and of course, through spring, everybody's kind of anticipating, but then you get like one day of nice weather and 3 days of garbage weather. Or if you live in Ohio, you get 15 minutes of nice weather and then 45 minutes of garbage weather, and then it keeps going back and forth. But I think at this point in time, the middle of the month, I mean, the farmers had something. I mean, yes, it was all around agriculture, and we're not an agricultural society per se anymore, although we still have to depend on that agriculture, because if we didn't have that agriculture going and paying attention to the times and the seasons, we wouldn't have food in the stores. We'd all be back in survival mode in the summertime, because I'm not sure about you. I know my family could probably handle some of it. But there are a lot of people out there who wouldn't know the first thing about how to provide for themselves if trucks didn't continually bring produce and meat and milk and things to the store. I'm not sure they would know how to handle things.
It's interesting you bring that up, because there's a move in Washington to seriously increase the cost of a gallon of fuel.
Yes.
With more taxes, federal taxes for quote-unquote infrastructure. And the fact is that the truckers are actually beginning to talk like they did in the 70s.
Yes.
If you'll recall the 70s, those of us who were around then, when I was about 16, maybe, somewhere in that vicinity, 17, I had a driver's license.
Yes.
There was a trucking strike. And one of the main centers for that strike was in Central Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can remember, I lived just a couple of miles north of one of the main places, but Route 70 was shut down. Trucks lined both lanes,
yes,
of I-70 going both directions, and you simply could not travel it. And they did the same thing on I-40, or not on I-40, but in Route 40,
mm-hmm,
which is the main east-west, when
corridor,
70,
yes,
when at the time, Route 70 had only been separated from Route 40 for maybe 5-6 years,
right? Yeah,
maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And there were places on Route 40 between Hebron and Columbus that were still 4-lane boulevarded that had been the track for Route 70 while it was,
yes,
under construction. And they're talking about there's a move on to say, okay, we're going to have to show you guys again if the trucks don't run, what it means.
Absolutely.
Now, the fact is, do they need more money for infrastructure? Well, no. What they need to do is spend the money they raise for infrastructure on infrastructure.
Well, now you're talking crazy there, Chuck.
Now, oh, I know.
You know, government can spend whatever they want to on whatever they feel like.
Yeah. And they do.
And they do.
And it has, right, almost never on infrastructure.
True.
Gas tax that's being increased here, when in about a month, somewhere around a month is when the new gas tax takes effect.
Yes, it begins in, yeah, next month.
Basically, that money is supposedly to fill potholes and fix bridges and that kind of thing. What were they doing with the money they were collecting from the state gas tax before that? Well, some of it went to bridges and roads,
yes,
but not all of it, like,
well,
it should have.
Well, Chuck, it's the same thing that what happened when they sold the lottery here in Ohio back in the
70s. Education.
That all the lottery profits would go to education. What they didn't say was the other part of the sentence, and an equivalent amount will be taken out of the general revenue fund from education in order to basically pay for our pet,
yeah,
project.
They took money out of one pocket and put it in another.
Yes, and frankly, and that the beat still goes on that one. So,
well, yeah, and how many years later? I think that was what, 1974? Three?
1973, yes.
Because at one time, I still had the two lottery tickets I bought for the first lottery,
yeah,
that I lost. I lost on.
Really? I thought all that we saw around you was part of your lottery.
Oh, yeah, right. Right. Yeah, well, guess what? Even then, $1 million doesn't go as far now as it did in 1973.
Well, isn't that true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thank you, government, because it's the hidden tax of inflation. And if you don't think inflation's a hidden tax, then you don't know much about how things work. You know, I can still remember my teachers in high school, in economics class and in government class, telling me that the national debt, well, I owed that to myself.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
And it, well, that's a lie.
Of course it is. But you have to understand, government's philosophy on this whole thing is they're not responsible for inflation. These nasty corporations who want to take profit are the ones who drive up the costs on things when they raise taxes.
Right.
When government raises taxes, it's all the company's faults.
We're starting to hear some of this same. I know you don't want to go here today, but we're starting to hear some absurd arguments regarding tariffs. Now, do I think tariffs are a good thing? I don't. I think they're a necessary thing from time to time. When, for instance, when countries are dumping products below cost on a market to crowd out competition, that's when you need to raise the tariff.
Okay. Tariffs are a tool that have to be used when previous administrations extend most favored nation trading status to too many bad players in the market.
To predatory nations who use predatory practices.
And gee, we've not done that at all. Nixon, Carter, Ford, Reagan. I could go on and on. We've extended MFN to too many bad players.
Too many. Way too many. And in fact, one of the problems we're having now is that China has essentially crowded us out of markets and Germany has done this for years and years and years. They would send cars over here at below cost.
Yes, absolutely.
To sell on the American market, and those companies got a subsidy. Why? Well, it had to do with trade balance.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, BMW, Audi, Volkswagen, right, were sending cars here and getting huge government subsidies because they couldn't compete in the American market due to manufacturing costs. Well, now, you know, in the meantime, American manufacturers were not really allowed to set up. You know, right now, GM, I don't think, has a presence in Europe except maybe England.
Okay.
They own a company called Vauxhall.
Oh, yes.
And when I was in England, now getting to be almost a decade ago, I used to pass on the train. I had to go through Vauxhall. And Vauxhall was originally where Vauxhalls were made. I'm not sure where now. But, GM's out. Ford has reduced, Chrysler's Fiat these days. So there's more of a presence there, but they're a foreign-owned company. So we're hearing a lot of boo-hooing by people who purport themselves to be libertarians, a.k.a. the Koch brothers. U.S. must eliminate all tariffs. Why is that? Why would people who are involved in manufacturing be interested in elimination of all tariffs? Well, that's easy.
Yeah.
You move your factory to a place where labor is cheaper, and then you can re-import it over here with no additional taxation, which is what a tariff is. It's a tax.
Right.
And it's an equalizing tax. The Koch brothers want to do this because they want to be able to outsource American jobs cheap.
Yep.
And that's why American corporations hate tariffs. Now, can tariffs be overdone? Oh, absolutely. For instance, they can be overprotective. And we tried that. We tried that for a while in the 60s and the 70s. It was an unmitigated disaster. That's why you saw when walls came down, for instance, Japanese steel dominated the market for a long time.
Yes, it did.
Does it anymore?
No, it does not.
Yeah, whose steel dominates?
Wow, Chinese.
Chinese. Yeah. Chinese steel. Is it very good?
That depends on who you ask.
A lot of people will tell you under the table, it's awful, and that American-made steel is much better. But American-made steel is a little more expensive. But in some cases, when you're trying to build a durable good and you want mm-hmm. thicker stock, you buy American because it's better steel. That's why steel manufacturing is up in this country.
Well, thank goodness for having an administration that pays attention.
Yeah, exactly.
And again... Are you going to sow good seeds, or are you going to sow seeds of destruction? MFN looked like good seeds, but it really was a seed of destruction of the American industry.
Yeah.
Because foreign competitors dumping onto your shores at below cost because they had zero expense to do so.
Right.
Thanks to our government subsidizing them, ended up creating, the exit of many companies out of the U.S. Why did Ford and GM and others build plants in Brazil and Argentina,
Mexico.
And Mexico and other places? Well, because they could go there, their cost of labor was cheaper, and when they imported it into the country, the tariff. There wasn't a tariff.
Very tiny tariff. Yeah,
they didn't have to deal with a tariff, and they could actually put their vehicles on the market, their domestic market, cheaper from outside the country.
Yeah, I think like BMW was building cars in Brazil. I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Volkswagen for years had a plant in a couple of plants in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That if you bought a Beetle, for instance, it was built in Mexico. Yeah.
Probably was.
Now, you know, you have companies coming up here, Japanese car companies. Honda's here.
Mm-hmm.
Toyota's here.
Yes.
Nissan has plants here.
Yes, they do.
Are they necessarily making all the parts? No. Some of those are made in Japan and brought here. And some of these plants are assembly and some are true manufacturing. It just depends. But assembly and manufacture, it's jobs in the United States of America for people who buy cars.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And everybody understands that. So, but what's the whole purpose behind this? Behind the whole tariff war with China? Well, the purpose is the fact that the Chinese have been bad players. They make trade agreements and then they violate them, and we're all supposed to go, oh yeah, but we can't do anything about it because they're an economic powerhouse because they've got all the.
And they're an economic powerhouse because.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's 1.3 billion people. It's like, yeah, and we want access to that market. But you know what? If the Chinese won't give us access to the market while they expect us to open our borders to allow them to access the market, well, that's not going to work.
And you know what? The premier of China can make all the threats they want to, but the point is that. They have so heavily invested in the U.S. dollar and in U.S. interests that President Trump knows exactly what he's doing with these trade negotiations
exactly.
with China, because he knows he's got them between the proverbial rock and hard place.
Yeah.
They can't undercut it too much because then they devalue their holdings.
Well, that's right. They hold a lot of U.S. treasuries.
Yes, they do. Absolutely.
What happens if they, you know, I've heard it said that they're going to call in their treasuries, and I go ahead.
I'd like to see them. You know what? They might call in some.
Yeah.
Just to see if they can't get him to blink. But I have the feeling that the president's going to be like, why don't you just call them all in?
Right.
And they are not going to do that because that would be an untenable position for them.
Well, of course it is. Trump anticipated this. One of the reasons for the tax cut that everybody's forgotten that they got in the first year of the Trump presidency, and why there was supposed to be another tax cut, was because he anticipated a trade war with China. And
yes.
And he anticipated an increase in prices that the tax cut was supposed to offset. What happened? Republicans got cold feet.
Okay, specifically two Republicans.
Yes.
Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell.
Who can't see past themselves.
And their leadership team, because yes. they're all attached at the hip with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who's all about global economy.
Oh, right.
Now, I'm all about global economy, too. I enjoy the fact that I can sell overseas. And, you know, do people have to pay duty? Yeah. People complain to me all the time. It costs me 25%. You know what? I can't do a thing about that.
Absolutely can't.
You know what? You're in Europe. Fix it.
Right, exactly. It's like it's on your end, not mine.
Yeah.
So.
Can you? And then they want me to commit fraud. They're like, can you put down on it that it's a gift? And I'm like, no, I cannot.
No, cannot.
Well, why not? Everybody else does it, and I go, here's why.
I don't sell gifts to start with.
Yeah, here's why.
I don't sell gifts.
Here's why. That is a crime. That's a $10,000 fine and like 2 years in jail.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm not doing that for you.
That's right. It's like, I don't believe that we are from the same mother. I don't believe that we have the same DNA, and I certainly am not married to you. So therefore, guess what? I'm not doing any of that.
Everything that comes out of this this office, when it goes overseas, is labeled merchandise and the price of whatever they paid for it.
Absolutely, because you have to do that in order to maintain your integrity.
That's right. And, you know, when I order stuff from overseas, I expect to have to pay the duty if there is one.
Sure. Of course you do.
And some people have told me when they get vitamins and it's under a certain amount of money, they don't even bother. Other times they do. It just depends. So... There you go. But the fact is that Republicans once again snatched defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah, but again, if we didn't tell that story, which one would we tell? Honestly, it seems to be more. Although, what you're finding now, and of course, this kind of segues into the next thing I wanted to kind of get into, is that what you have now are the Republicans who have been the problem, i.e., the establishment rhinos, specifically now sticking their necks out and agreeing and voting with the party that's supposed to be their fighting, which is the Democrat Party.
Yes, yeah.
And the biggest example we received of that just recently, Chuck, was one senator from the great state of Massa, Utah, Mitt Romney.
We've got another one, but go ahead.
But Mitt, who was the only Republican senator to vote against one of Donald Trump's judicial nominees.
And the reason?
The reason was because it was sour grapes. He didn't like the fact that this judge, a number of years ago, when I think it was even before Mitt was running for president against Barack Obama, had basically said a few things questioning the integrity of Barack Obama. He's basically, when this nominee was running for Congress.
Yes.
Gee, if I'm running in a primary for Congress in a district and I'm running as a conservative, and it's anywhere between 2008 and 2016, who am I attacking?
And the person you're attacking is corrupt as can be.
As corrupt as all get out.
Yeah.
But then the guy who runs against him and basically takes a flop, and I'll say, I believe Mitt Romney threw that election. I honestly, the more I look at it, the more I realize he threw the election.
Well, there are a number of people that agree with you. You want to know the truth? I think he's just hapless.
Well, there could be that as well. I mean, I guess I'm giving him more credit than he deserves. But he just basically, because he didn't like it, and he decided that this was his way of getting back at this guy who had so besmirched Barack Obama. It's like, okay, Mitt, maybe if you'd been throwing a few more of those punches at Obama yourself, you would have been sitting in the White House?
That's the bottom line. He had no real core disagreements with Obama.
Of course not. They saw things fairly eye to eye.
So we basically had, in contrast to 2016, in both 2008 and 2012,
mm-hmm.
we had Socialist Party A and Socialist Party B.
Right. And it's great that we have adults who are now in the room after 2016 who basically understand that you have to go and you have to get into the office in order to do anything. But now that they're into office, I mean, from day one that Mitt Romney decided to run from Utah, which there's some question. Okay,
yeah, is Mitt a carpetbagger? This is
he's a carpetbagger.
This is the third state that he has.
That's not even a question anymore. But the question is that from the moment he jumped in, okay, the only time he was ever nice to President Trump was when he wanted the guy's endorsement for his Senate race.
Oh, he wanted to be named Secretary of State, too.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I forgot about that. As soon as he won election, what did he do day one, Chuck?
Oh, he was all over Trump.
Negatively.
Attacking him. Yeah.
And it just keeps going. This guy is so eaten up with jealousy.
Yeah.
That Donald Trump did something that Mitt Romney could never do, and that is win the White House.
Listen, John Kasich has the same thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you remember during the 2016, I'm the adult in the room?
Yep. I do.
Meaning, how is this guy? It's the same attitude that Hillary Clinton had.
Can I suggest
something? I should be beating this guy a million to zero.
Can I suggest something? The person who says, I'm the adult in the room, is the one who's showing the most immaturity.
Absolutely.
You know, think about it logically, folks. If somebody is so cocksure of themselves and arrogant that they say a phrase like that with people who honestly are their peers or better, they're the ones who are showing that they're childish.
They're betters. Let's be, yeah, be honest about
yeah,
it.
When you're talking about John Kasich, yeah, okay. Let's and Mitt Romney, yes, they're betters. I would take a Marco Rubio any day of the week over either one of those two.
Oh yeah,
I definitely would have taken Ted Cruz. And as you and I have talked offline, and I'll just be quite honest about it, unless something really changes that's drastically detrimental to what I'm seeing so far, I believe I might take a Donald Trump in the next election over any of those kind of guys.
Well, let's see what happens in the next few months.
Yeah,
because,
I'm holding fire because I know I didn't vote for him in the first time around. But honestly, I've not seen a more pro-life president.
No.
I've not seen a more pro-constitutional president. I've not seen a more pro-family president since not Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Calvin Coolidge.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And I didn't even see Calvin. I'm just reading about him.
And, do a little research on Warren Harding, who essentially got tainted by the whole Teapot Dome scandal thing.
Sure.
And really, that was not his baby.
No.
But let's not get into that because all we'll hear about it. Oh, you are defending the indefensible. Well, no, I'm not. But anyway, you start looking around at the people who were the movers and shakers in the Republican Party, and let's take Nicole Wallace, who was John McCain's campaign manager.
Yes.
Hated Sarah Palin from the moment she was
and
actively worked to undermine her and continues to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But where's Nicole Wallace now to show what her true colors? Nicole Wallace works for MSNBC.
Yes, she does.
And, daily comes out and proves what she is and what she was in 2008.
Yes, indeed. Which was an operative for the Democratic Party.
She was an operative for the new Republican Party, which,
okay,
which
yes.
is essentially the old Democratic Party.
Indeed.
That's the problem we face. These moderates who had seized the party and will attempt to seize it again once the Trump phenomena is gone. You have to keep that in mind. If Trump manages to get a second term, the moderates will be, well, it's time to go back to sanity. That's what you'll hear.
Oh, yeah. Well, they'll be trying to steer it because what they want to do is engineer the next presidency, which means that who are they trying to influence the most in a second Trump presidency? Mike Pence.
Mike Pence, yeah.
Obviously.
Well, and he's a mixed bag, as Trump is. I'll be quite honest.
Well, Trump's absolutely.
A mixed bag. And Mike Pence is, too. Mike Pence has shown that he has a jelly spine.
Mm-hmm. True.
With that whole mess with the Defense of Marriage Act in Indiana that suddenly turned around and became the, the full employment, the employment, ENDA.
Oh, well,
DOMA
yeah.
became ENDA
DOMA became
over
ENDA,
a weekend.
And now is the Equality Act.
Yeah.
Which is the next thing I wanted to talk about was it's H.R. 5. The Democrats in the House are pushing it. It's basically, because you mentioned the Chamber of Commerce a little bit earlier as being part
the United
of the
States Chamber of Commerce.
Part of the problem with trade. They're also, they've moved now from the trade issue. Now they're becoming part of the problem on social issues. Because it's the U.S. Chamber of Commerce who is now pushing for passage of the Gay Rights Act, the what they call the Equality Act in federal Congress. Now, is it passed the House? Yeah. Is it going to pass the Senate? Well, it depends. If McConnell allows it to get marked up, the guess is yeah. Because the normal gang of eight that you have to deal with most things in that Republican caucus, your people like... Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins and our own Rob Portman.
Yeah, Portman.
Who will all vote in favor of that bill.
Oh, some of the...
And some of the squish, mucky middle...
Sass.
Some of those guys who live and die with the Chamber of Commerce. Same thing's happening here at the state level, Chuck. I mean, you know, everybody's focused on the Equality Act, but we... 2 weeks ago... The Senate Bill 11, which is what's called the Ohio Fairness Act, which is basically a almost carbon copy of the Federal Equality Act. It basically is a, we're going to force churches, businesses, and property owners to have to accede to the homosexual rights demands. It started getting movement in the state Senate with a testimony, and of course they quote unquote did a substitute bill in order to tweak some things, which honestly didn't change a whole lot, but because the bill's onerous as it is. But it's a bill here in Ohio that, guess who's behind it supporting it now? The Ohio Chamber of Commerce.
That's not a shock at all.
Who helped coordinate a little thing called Ohio Business Competes, which is about 500 of the largest businesses in the state of Ohio who all band together, say, pushing to get this bill passed.
And now, people think that the Chamber of Commerce is a conservative group.
God, no, they have not been a conservative group for years.
Decades.
Well, okay, I'll give you that. I mean, it was the Ohio and the U.S. Chambers of Commerce who pushed Common Core education policy.
Yeah, because that was going to bring us up to standard.
That was going to bring us up and make us, you know, the envy of the world. Well, guess what? It hasn't. It's basically helped to
make us a laughing stock.
Crumble education policy in this country. So now they're behind the push for radical gay rights. Now, Chuck, I'm a little bit more of a cynic on this whole thing. And I think that there's an agenda, because if you look at the Ohio Business Competes group and you look at all the entities that are in it, pretty much every one of those entities already have these policies in place in their own businesses, which they're allowed to do.
Right.
If they want to do preferential hiring, or they want to have, you know, employee non-discrimination policies, they're welcome to do so. But what they're wanting to do now, Chuck, is to use the force of law, which is force, to require, thank you, every business in Ohio, that even though ones that could compete with them and ones that can't compete with them on scale, to have to do the same thing they're doing. Why? Because maybe they've put these policies in place and they're finding out that they're a drain on resources,
they're a
drain on focus, it's hurting the company's bottom line.
Therefore, everybody, but
you can't come out and admit that, because that wouldn't be politically correct. You would end up being attacked by the gay rights movement.
Okay, I'm going to put a different face on it. This is big business versus small business.
Yes, it is.
They can absorb the extra costs. Small businesses cannot.
That's right. And so basically it becomes a ConAgra kind of deal, where the big corporates all suck up all the little ones, because they change regulations on them to make the little ones not profitable anymore.
Exactly. This is going on all over the place. The big boys really want the little guys out of the picture. I'm running into problems right now with people tying up raw material markets. Now, companies I used to deal with that used to send representatives out to call on me won't even give me a second look now, because I'm not buying a train car full of stuff. You know, I want 25 kilos, a drum.
Well, you got enough space out here. You could park a couple of train cars.
You're right. Right. Getting them out here, though, getting them to run a spur line here is not going to be easy.
Well, that's why you haven't put them in those shipping containers and have all those big trucks come rolling out there.
And then you build an outbuilding out of it after you're done with the shipping container.
You know what? I think my wife would take you up on that one.
I've taken a look at it. You can buy one of those for about $2,200. A nice 20 by 40. That's a nice size outbuilding.
And by the time you weatherized it and did what you needed to do inside, you probably are not spending more than $20,000 in order to get a decent little...
Oh, you're talking about living in one. I'm just talking about turning it into a storage shed.
Well, I mean, but I'm saying by the time you put framework in there, make sure the floor is going to stay, you know, without corroding.
Yeah.
And you put insulation and things in there and cut a few window slots out or door slot out for it. Yeah, you may be looking at $20,000, but, you know, $20,000 for what, a 56-foot building?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But that being said, I would really say this is, again, the bigs trying to force out the smalls, knowing full well that we can't comply, and what will happen is that the state will move in and sue us.
Well, sure.
You're not compliant.
Right.
We can't be compliant with that. I can't go around and actively recruit transgenders. I can't, and I wouldn't.
Sure, absolutely.
Now, if somebody came in here and I didn't had no idea, and how you can't tell, I don't know. But I had no idea, and I hired them. Would I keep them? If they were a good employee, okay. Listen, you do what you want when you want to. I don't care.
If they're a good employee and they don't bring their personal life into the workplace,
yeah,
then fine. Because, Chuck, that's what the whole thing's about in the first place. If you think about it, there are federal regulations. If you were to give somebody a job interview, there are questions you can't ask them.
Right.
That's one of them.
One of them you're not supposed to ask. How old are you?
Yeah. That's ageism, yes.
What is your gender?
Sexism, yeah.
Even though, now, here's the catch-22. You're required over a certain number of employees to fill quotas.
Yes,
but
sadly.
But you're
can't
not
figure
allowed
out
to,
how to fill those quotas.
You're not allowed to ask quota questions.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a catch-22. But again, we're hoping that this bill, now for the last 10 years, they've introduced something like this at the state level. And all up until this last year, the Chamber of Commerce had stayed out of it because they had businesses who didn't want it, and they had businesses who were already doing it. Well, now they've decided now that we need to push society a little bit farther left, Chuck. So now you've got the business interests, and again, you've seen this in many, many cultures where the moneyed interests come in and try to manipulate the social environment.
Oh, absolutely.
In order to create markets.
Yeah.
Which is exactly where this is going to.
Of course.
And one of the best markets you can create is what's called a monopoly market. Because that means you control it all.
you control the entirety of the market.
You control the market. And that's where this is coming down to. And honestly, it's something that people we'll keep telling people about as it's going along here. Hopefully it stops dead in its tracks, but we still got a long way to go during this session of the legislature before it's all done.
And let's face it, the governor has a progressive streak.
Yeah, on this issue, I'm not really sure where the governor is going to land. Now, on another issue, with heartbeat,
he was right on target. And we have to give him kudos for that.
And you know what? I got to give him more kudos because immediately they've jumped to, because we're taping this on a Thursday. On Wednesday of this week, finally, it was about 34 days after the signing of the bill, but again, still short of the 90 days before it took effect.
Right.
The ACLU of Ohio and Planned Parenthood, along with some private abortion providers, filed a federal lawsuit to block the heartbeat bill from going into effect. It was filed in the Southern District Court, Federal District Court, which is located in Columbus. And Chuck, we talked about this on our monthly program with Mike O'Reilly.
Right.
That, surprise, surprise, by luck of the lottery draw, the ACLU managed to get their case in front of Judge Michael Barrett, who has a history of being the judge on a number of these abortion-related cases and always has ruled in favor of the plaintiffs instead of the state. Imagine that.
Yeah, no built-in prejudice there.
Well, and the fact is, I wish the ACLU should start buying lottery tickets. If they're that lucky in that kind of draw, can you imagine how much money they could bring in if they just bought lottery tickets?
You and I both know that's not...
not the case.
I asked you this morning, and I'll ask you again. How is it that the left and the pro-aborts always manage to draw the right judge? Because as we spoke about, those cases are supposed to be rewarded on a lottery basis. They're supposed to be randomly assigned. It never fails. They always get the right judge. And it's supposedly done that way at the federal level, too. And it never fails. The left always gets the right judge of the district or the circuit.
Yep.
Never fails.
And, I told you what I think happens, because many of these judges, before they take the bench, and sometimes even after they take the bench, they're supporters of these organizations. They give to Planned Parenthood. They are a card-carrying member of the ACLU. So when they get on the bench, and some of these like juicy cases come up where they could give their friends some help, it's not surprising that they might just go into conference with the rest of the judges and say, hey, I'd like to take that case. You know, sign that over to me. I want that case.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, I don't believe it's necessarily, well, you know, you're just going to take it. Now, again, at the U.S. Supreme Court level, when it comes to review, each of the justices are over certain circuits to review cases. So, therefore, that's not we can go through Ohio, go through the Sixth Circuit, throw it up there, and we'll get, whether it was an Antonin Scalia or a Brett Kavanaugh to review our cases, because I believe in our circuit, it is Elena Kagan who is the reviewing justice for stuff coming out of the Sixth Circuit. But anyhow, excuse me.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So anyhow, you've got this situation going on where now Michael Barrett has drawn this case. So I have no doubt that he will issue a temporary injunction, restraining order, stay, whichever way they go about asking for it, to block Heartbeat from going into effect on July 11th when it was supposed to. But, Chuck, on the other side of the coin, I'm glad they didn't wait the entire 90 days and they went ahead and got this lawsuit started. Because the state of Ohio is going to defend it pretty aggressively. Dave Yost, the attorney general, has already promised that he's going to defend it to the teeth. You've got a governor who's supportive of it and put some political capital into it. And you have two things going on. First thing is, well, they had to file in Ohio. And Ohio is part of the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals District.
Right.
The 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals just recently issued a big ruling agreeing with the state of Ohio that Planned Parenthood doesn't deserve taxpayer dollars. They don't have a right to them. And so upheld a law that the state of Ohio passed to block Planned Parenthood from receiving these monies. That's not a good sign for the ACLU in these cases.
No, it's not.
It's all, and again, this is where good seed versus seeds of destruction, Chuck. Mitt Romney is voting against Trump's judicial nominees. How did we win this case in the Sixth Circuit?
Yeah.
Because Trump just got through appointing
two
conservative justices to the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals who voted with a majority. Now, if those two had not been there, it could have gone the other way.
Yeah.
And we would have been looking at the pro-aborts writing a majority opinion and rather than the pro-lifers writing a majority opinion. The second thing we have going for us is a little thing that just happened this week at the United States Supreme Court, where in a 5-4 decision, with Clarence Thomas writing the majority opinion in the Hyatt case, the United States Supreme Court just reversed itself on a 40-year-old precedent, and they realigned themselves with constitutional principles.
Yeah.
Now, here's the little thing about this case. Hyatt was an inventor who patented and marketed an item that he invented while he lived in the state of California. $10 million later, he moves away from California and moves to Nevada. Well, the California Board of Tax Correction or whatever it is, i.e., believed that he owed them buku bucks in California taxes for the money he was making on his invention.
While living in...
Yeah, well, the question was, when he moved to Nevada. But the point is that they'd been after him for years, doing things like hiring investigators to sift through his garbage.
Yeah.
Surveilling him, following him, doing all sorts of things that basically, people are getting in trouble with in D.C. right now for doing. And Hyatt had enough, so he filed a lawsuit in Nevada against the California Board of Tax Revision. Now, Chuck, you and I both know the Constitution fairly well. There's a little Constitution that basically says that the citizen of a state cannot sue another state in their courts. But then there was this decision that the United States Supreme Court made 40 years ago that turned that constitutional prohibition on its ear, where the justices at the time, and I believe it was Harry Blackmun, ruled that it was okay that a citizen who lived in another state could sue another state, another state other than the one they lived in. So that's been the precedent for 40 years, and you've had some interesting decisions that have come out of that, most of them bad. But as of this week, that precedent has been reversed and the constitutional framework has been reinstated in this Hyatt decision, because Clarence Thomas, for the majority, basically said, no. A citizen who lives in state A cannot sue state B without state B's consent, which is the constitutional point.
Which is the constitutional point.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to bring up a scenario. Think about this.
Well, let me just finish the thought.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, and then I'll bring up my thought.
And that precedent was what got Justice Stephen Breyer, who wrote for the dissent, the minority opinion, that they worried about how far this could be carried in attacking stare decisis.
Ultimately,
they know the cases they're worried about, and that is
Roe. Yeah.
Because we have not only in Ohio with heartbeat, Kentucky's heartbeat bill, Tennessee's heartbeat bill, and now Alabama, who just this week finally passed, and their governor signed on Wednesday, a full abortion ban bill with no exceptions for rape and incest, thank God, and life imprisonment for the abortion providers. That'll be coming up through another circuit. Can you imagine what the liberal... I mean, my wife is a surreptitious subscriber to Planned Parenthood's e-newsletter. They are losing their collective minds.
Yeah.
They're scared to death. They know what this the Hyatt decision means with a new court. If a Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Stephen Breyer or an Elena Kagan or a Sonia Sotomayor happen to leave the court in the next 2 to 6 years.
Think about this. They're losing a gigantic cash cow with the restriction of abortion. That it's a gigantic cash cow for them. Mm-hmm. It's a huge profit center. And we're a nonprofit and we don't make a profit. Nonsense. Nonprofits make all kinds of profit.
Yes,
they're required to plow them back into the organization.
Yes.
That's the way it works. That's why it's a nonprofit.
Or for their charitable purpose, which if it's out there to help the community, like buy people clothing and shelter and food.
Yeah, supposedly educational. Okay, so Planned Parenthood claims to do women's health screening and all that, which they don't do.
No.
That's all contracted out. And I can remember having some people in my family say, well, I've gone to them for years for, pap smears and all that. And I said, no, you don't. You go to a clinic that they recommend. There's a big difference.
True.
So let's get that out of the way. Now, where I was going to go is, think about this scenario. For instance, and this has real life implications, because when Bloomberg was mayor of New York, he was sending undercover law enforcement to surrounding states and as far away as Florida to gun shows to try to purchase guns, and doing surveillance on people who were gun dealers not within their state. When you discover you're being spied upon by the agents of a foreign state, and that's exactly what's going on, you can't sue them under the Constitution except in federal court. You can't sue them in your state court, even though the crime took place in your state. I see it both directions.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that has gone on. In the Hyatt case, California was surveilling Hyatt.
Yes.
In Nevada.
Yes, in Nevada. That's
with,
right.
Using California law enforcement and regulatory agents.
Yeah, it's no wonder he sued them.
Yeah. And, I get that. But the text of the Constitution is clear. A resident of one state cannot sue the government of another state without its permission.
That's right.
Why? Why is that?
Well, I think about the chaos that could ensue
there's a magic word.
Okay, I'm drawing a blank.
Sovereignty.
Oh, of course. Yes, of course. Sovereignty.
This is where the lie comes in. You know, people have accused, people always come to me, oh, you're a state's writer. No, states don't have rights. They have
sovereignty. That's right.
And the fact is that Ohio is a sovereign state. It has surrendered a piece of its sovereignty over a limited area, essentially defense, diplomacy, and trade, to the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is a 10th Amendment issue, which is the argument that Alabama is making.
Yes, they are.
For their right to pass what amounts to an abortion ban.
The total abortion ban.
I mean, you can still get one. The mother basically has to be in imminent danger.
Yeah, there,
which
there,
is, isn't really an abortion there,
there's,
because
there's a life medical exception there. Well, yeah, okay, it is, but it isn't. Okay,
yeah.
And you know, we've talked to some physicians who have some interesting positions on this, one way or the other.
Yeah.
But okay, here's the big problem. While everybody else is celebrating the fact that we have a basically a total ban on abortion, there's a small handful of folks in the movement who are saying that the Alabama law is flawed and they don't support it because
Pat Robertson.
Well, Pat Robertson has lost his mind a long time ago.
Yeah.
And frankly, if you listen to Pat Robertson, you probably should rethink this.
Right.
But what they're saying is that the Alabama law, they don't like it because A, it didn't specifically clearly line out the personhood of the unborn from the moment of conception. It's like, well, if you say that it's a felony offense for you to abort an unborn child, I think that's spelling it out without spelling it out. Now, granted, I get the person, some of the folks in the personhood, and again, overall, the personhood movement folks like the bill. This is the AHA folks, the Abolish Human Abortion folks.
Right.
And that's fine, I get it, but again, they've lost the idea of what William Wilberforce did with regard to slavery. And they're trying to use that model that was in their own thinking to come up here today. So the bill's bad because it didn't specifically spell out personhood. Second thing is, the bill's bad because it didn't criminalize the woman. That's why they're mad at this bill, is because it didn't say that the woman who is having the abortion performed on her, it should be given life imprisonment or the death penalty. Now, you and I both know that in many instances, that is a conscious decision that a woman makes to end the life of an unborn child, and therefore she is an accessory. However,
she doesn't actually do it herself.
But when the state says that it's legal to do it in certain circumstances using certain procedures, there, it's very difficult to say you're going to criminalize the woman.
Right.
Once the state has said that any type of procedure that ends in the death of a fertilized egg, embryo, fetus, up to the moment of birth, then if a woman continues to seek out a banned and illegal practice, at that point there should be some consideration of whether or not to charge her as an accessory or complicit in trying to obtain an illegal procedure. Okay? But this is not that place right now.
Right.
Because the key is that, yes, are there going to be women who do the coat hanger thing? There'll be a few because they're going to do it to try to become martyrs, to try to become, Elizabeth.
I mutilated myself for the cause.
Yeah, I mutilated myself for the cause so I could be the poster child. Yeah, that's going to happen. But the vast majority, once you tell a provider that they can go to prison for doing a procedure, how many times do you think they're going to do that procedure willingly?
Yeah.
There will be a few, just like Jack Kevorkian, who will do it surreptitiously, who will roam around and probably have floating clinics. But sooner or later, they're going to get caught. Now, what can they do right now? They can just move to New York or Virginia or Vermont or Rhode Island or any other state that basically says, oh, not only do we love abortion, we want you to do it all the way up through birth and then some.
Well, Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia,
yep,
talking about basically aborting a baby after it's born.
That's right. That's right. Well, he's not alone. I mean, you know, during the Alabama debate on their law, you had, what was it, John Rogers, who's an African-American Democrat, who basically said, kill him now or kill him later, who cares?
That was during the Alabama debate.
That's what
it?
I just said.
Yeah, okay.
It was during the Alabama
debate in the House.
Talking
about the Senate.
The House passed that bill like 73 to 21 or something like that, sent it to the Senate. The Senate finally passed. They ripped out an exception. that was put in committee. In the Senate committee, the chair of the Senate committee was a squish and put in a rape and incest exception. It went to the Senate floor. The first thing they did a week ago was ripped out the rape and incest exception, and then they held the bill over from Thursday until the beginning of this week for people. And, of course, the left and the Democrats and the right. Republicans all screamed bloody murder about how horrible it was that we can't continue to kill babies conceived in rape and incest. But
thus applying the death penalty to one of the victims
exactly, yeah. And only the victim, because you can't give a rapist a death penalty, Chuck.
No, of course not.
Under federal or state law, you cannot give them a death penalty. So the only person who gets the death penalty is the unborn child who has no part in it whatsoever, except to be an innocent bystander who just happens to get pulled into the fray.
Yeah,
by purposes of getting conceived. Thankfully, though, cooler has failed. They voted 25-6 on the floor of the Alabama Senate. Sent it to Governor Kay Ivey on Tuesday. On Wednesday, she signed it into law. Probably before this airs on Saturday, the ACLU in Alabama will have filed for an injunction.
Or they may do what, because remember, that law does not take effect for 6 months.
Yeah, their law doesn't take effect till January of next year. So
right.
It's like 6.5 months, or seven, actually. Because today's May, so it's like 7 months, because it doesn't take effect till January 2020.
Yeah, so they've got some time.
All right.
And I think they're going to, hopefully, what they want to do is piecemeal these and not have some federal court roll like the Supremes roll it all into one.
Well, I think what's going to happen is they may want to push this one faster.
Maybe.
And get it up the chain before heartbeat bills get there.
Yeah.
Because the point of law on this one's a little different than the point of law on heartbeat. Because with heartbeat, as much as I love it and as much as I worked on it, it still is a regulatory bill. The other is a complete prohibition. Complete legal prohibition on abortion. That's a different set of legal arguments.
Right. Alabama's basically anticipating that the Supreme Court's going to turn it back to the states.
It's going
to
roll right over. And they're doing a mirror opposite of what New York did.
Right.
Instead of saying it's legal all through all 9 months, they're saying it's illegal all the way back to conception.
Right. And what's going to happen is, chances, I think, are pretty good that what's going to happen is we'll go back to essentially before Roe v. Wade, where it's in the control of the states, and in the states, the two states that it was on demand was New York and Colorado.
Colorado, yeah.
And California had a liberal law, but it wasn't a complete woohoo, have at it, kill babies.
Yeah.
But Colorado did, if I'm not mistaken. The whole argument was that it was unfair that a woman in Mississippi had to travel to New York to get an abortion. Therefore, it should be legal everywhere.
Yeah, that was part of the argument, yes.
Yeah. And therefore, it was a violation of her rights. Well, that's, of course, on its face is not, you have no,
it's absurd.
You have no right to take a human life. Does that exclude the death penalty? No, of course not, because the death penalty is a mandate.
It's a state carrying out justice. It's not an individual carrying out their will.
It's not you and me deciding that somebody did us wrong, and so we go out and set a trap for them and kill them. That's not justice. It's a fair trial with witnesses. Am I saying that no miscarriage of justice has ever occurred? Don't be stupid. We all know we live in an era when live in an adversarial system rather than a mm-hmm. system that seeks justice. I've talked to a number of people who I know are very conservative, and they told me that are attorneys, and they said, I asked them about the death penalty, and they said, if it was applied properly, but it's not.
It's not. Justice is perverted in our court systems.
Yeah.
And because I'm not a big fan of the death penalty under the current rubric of how we consider justice to be.
Right. So let's not conflate, as people love to do, the death penalty and abortion, because they're not the same. We can always ask a legitimate question is, so you would kill the innocent victim, but you would save the life of the perpetrator.
That's basically what they're saying.
And so it's what a twisted and sick and sad world we live in. Now, guess what, Barry?
We're out of time.
We're out of time. And that means that we sign off with the way we usually do. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com, where you can hear our archives and read some of our articles. And there's a lot of other important things going on, but this is the topic we ended up on. And we would ask that you would join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.